Welcome to the Roy Harper Podcast. This is episode number 8 for April 2008. Welcome. My name's Paul Davison and I run the website stormcock.net. In this episode, first of all a news roundup, then we have part 1 of a two-part interview with Dave and Sue Burnham. We have the A to Z of Harper, this time the letter H. We have some listener feedback and a fairly nice selection of Roy Harper music. I'm also very pleased to announce the forthcoming new Robert Harbin podcast, which I'll talk more about in a little while. My feet are firmly on the ground, but my mind is off at the speed of sound. So, first of all, some news. Not too much on the Roy front again, I'm afraid. I think he's still in hibernation, but that's fine. I did see Nick Harper in March, playing in Cambridge, and it was a wonderful gig, and I met up with some old friends there as well. Nick has a new track, a new song he sang called 38, and it's absolutely wonderful. And if that's a sign of things that are coming for the next album, I'm really fired up about it. Very, very good. And Nick is also supporting the Levellers at the Royal Albert Hall in London on Saturday, the 27th of September 2008. I've already got tickets, and I'm really looking forward to that as well. I wanted to talk very briefly in the podcast about the Splinters project. This is something that I initially started on the Stormcock email list many, many years ago. And the idea of it was to get people that had some kind of musical or lyrical or poetic ability to record a track and send it in. And we'd stick it up on the website and people could listen to it. And it went really well. We ended up actually making a CD and sending it to various people that were prepared to pay for the manufacturing cost of the CD. And that was, I don't know, 10 years ago, maybe more, I'm not sure. We did a Splinters 2 at the party that we had around Roy's 60th birthday celebration at the Royal Festival Hall. We had a little gig in the basement of a bar and recorded it and sent those out as well on a CD. So in 2007, we decided to have another go at Splinters, and this was the Splinters 3 project. And I got lots of entries, lots of people sent me MP3s, and I put them up on the Stormcock website. If you go to stormcock.net now and look on the left-hand divider, you'll see there's a Splinters category there. And you can look at all of the entries and you can listen to them. You just download them as MP3s, freely available. And it really showed what an awful lot of talent there is in the Roy Harper community. Lots of people writing original songs and performing them with outstanding musical ability. So finally, last month, Nick Lay, my old friend, finally kicked me enough to collaborate with him on producing a CD, which is currently for sale on a limited edition basis until the end of April. Basically, what we've done is taken the MP3s that people submitted, compiled them into a particularly appropriate running order. Nick has produced a wonderful little booklet to go along with it and CD cover artwork and everything else, and we're selling it at cost price. So if you're interested in that, I'll have a link to that page in the show notes, but we're only selling it until the end of April. You want one, get in quickly, but it's all freely available, as I say, on the website. I thought, just to break with tradition, I would play a track from Splinters 3, which obviously isn't a Roy Harper track. One of the submissions was from a band called Porvari. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, because I'm not entirely sure. That's Simon, who I was in contact with, and asked him whether I would, whether he would mind me playing the track on the podcast. And he said, no problem. And in fact, what he's done is he's given me a studio version of a track, Star of the Show. The live version is the one that's on Splinters. So this is kind of a different interpretation of that track. But I thought it would be fun to listen to this, and it's quite representative of the quality of the material that's on the Splinters 3 CD, so it might whet your appetite. You can find more about Porvari from the show notes, and this is the track Star of the Show.
Do you want to count us in, Sam?
Okay.
John, it's happening just like I said it would. The system is extolling what you planned. Dear John, don't let it bite, its teeth are sharp. And the syntax is what you and I won't understand. You should beware, my friend. It is an evil road we must tread. Without a kindly word, we must accept what will not be said. Yeah, 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 yeah. Dear John, don't let your mind run away from this. Give me another clue which I should know. John, don't crack. If you do, the reason's gone. You alone can predict which way my mind might blow. I heard it was people like us that were susceptible to prayer. But if we can close our ears, well, we can surely close their care. John, you've been the helping hand more than once. If I can't repay, I'll surely have to leave. Dear John, your thoughts are so much clearer now. And what can a health fanatic life not achieve? An inkling of sympathy passes over my furrowed face. Please don't encourage him. He might just take my place. Yeah, 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 yeah. Don't you dare give in. Don't you give in, John. John, I tell you, man, no, 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 don't you give in, John. John, I said, oh, don't you give in, John. I wanna tell you, man, John, you're the star of the show.
Thanks a lot, Simon, for giving me permission to play that. You can find out more about Porvari at www.porvari.co.uk, P-O-R-V-A-R-I, and you can buy their CD through them, but you can also buy a download version of that CD from Woven Wheat Whispers, who I've mentioned before. It's a folk online record company, basically. You can download the MP3s, which I have just done this morning. I bought their album because I like that track, and I'll be listening to it a bit later on. Do you like hearing non-Roy stuff on this podcast? I thought I might throw in the odd track here and there just to mix things up a bit. If you've got an opinion, let me know through email. I'll give you all the links and contact info later on. Okay, now on for a Roy track, and the choice of songs beginning with the letter H for the A to Z of Harper this month was very rich, and I had a lot of trouble deciding which one to pick. One of the very strong candidates was Hallucinating Light, one of my favourite songs of all time, but not possibly the best H song, as we may discover later on. So this track is Hallucinating Light, but it's the 7-inch single version, which came as a bonus track on the HQ CD.
Locked in Mortal Kombat as the future shadows loom, the guardian of my spirit fights his way across the the room to where the sick majority infest the myths of doom. But the lanterns of children still hold in full bloom, and we'll walk along. Inside the purple dawn, collecting golden dew that falls from citadels of dreams, I shake while flying through. Creation's key seems just in reach, and then it's overdue. But as darkness surrounds us, I'm reaching for you, and we'll walk a long way. When I fly, it's with your soul. When I cry, it's you. La 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 la. La 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 la
That's a really nice version of that track. I love the band version on HQ, but the Roy solo one has a lot of expression in it. I really like it very much. Now, I mentioned briefly in the introduction that I was bringing out another podcast. Well, I've had a lot of real encouragement about the Roy Harper podcast, and I've, you know, gained confidence in what I'm doing. And I thought, well, you know, let's try something else. And the choice was quite wide. What on earth could I do another monthly podcast about? So I thought, well, you know, I'll take a strange aspect to it. I'll pick somebody else with the initials RH. Why not? So I've settled on Robert Harbin. Do you know who Robert Harbin is? Well, in my childhood, in the mid-70s, I was a very clever boy and was the envy of everybody else at school. And as such, for a while, for a couple of years, until I got really confident in my own abilities, I had quite a solitary little existence there. So I used to watch a lot of TV when I got home from school. And one of the things that was on was an origami program presented by a guy called Robert Harbin. And I got heavily into origami, which is the Japanese art of paper folding. And Robert Harbin had a number of paperback books, which are collector's items now. And I was able to work my way up to the very most difficult paper folding that he did. So I thought what I'd do is a monthly paper folding podcast, and I will lead you through constructing a particular origami model every month. Unfortunately, origami is a fairly visual thing, and on audio podcast it will be a little bit difficult for you to follow what I'm doing, but I will put some pictures up on the show notes as well, so you can follow me through the podcast making each fold as I make the fold. And just to give you an idea of what to expect in the origami podcast, I am now going to, during the duration of this podcast, make a little model of Roy and Nick on stage at the Bloomsbury Theatre in the early 90s. It's a situation I think we all remember very well. And I have my piece of paper here, and I'm making the first fold. There we go. That's a very good start. So more to come in a little while. Now we have our interview. This is part one of my interview with Dave and Sue Burnham. I've known Dave and Sue for many years. They're really good friends. They live down in Brighton. And they came up to visit me a few weeks ago. Had a really nice weekend with them. And of course, we sat down in the basement and had a good old chat. I think you're going to love it. Here we go. Right. As I recall this, it's Saturday the 16th of February. And I've got two house guests for the weekend. Two very old friends, Dave and Sue Burnham, who have driven up here from Brighton for a fun weekend, but we're doing business first, so we're getting an interview out of the way. So, first of all, I've known Dave and Sue for a long time through various gigs and everything else, and we'll talk a bit more about how we got to know each other in a moment. But first of all, I wonder if the pair of you would like to give a very brief intro to yourselves for the listenership.
It's nice to see you, Paul. Thanks for inviting us here to Davison Villas down here in the Pod Cave.
Absolutely.
Marvellous. Yeah.
Thanks, Paul. Nice to be
here. Yeah, well, I'm Dave Burnham, and I'm a science fiction writer, occasional poet, vegetable gardener, dabbled in decoupage, original artwork, and I'm a dentist by day and a dreamer by night.
And Sue here, just basically, Dave's other half, do stuff at the University of Sussex, and lots of gardening, cooking.
First things first, how did it all begin? How did the Roy Harper thing happen to you both? How did you get into the music?
Okay, I first became aware of Roy, I guess, during the kind of mid-70s when I was a teenager, and people were talking about Roy Harper, and someone brought Flat Baroque and Berserk into the college where I was, and I was just saw the cover and thought, this is an amazing looking record, and sort of heard it, loved it, particularly like White Man, and that sort of resonated at the time, and just completely loved it, but then sort of lost track of him a bit over the following decade, really. Other things happened in my life, and then Dave and I met in, well, mid-80s, I suppose, was it?
Yeah, 86.
And we nattered a lot about music, so you take over.
We discovered we had a mutual interest. Well,
yeah, that's right.
The way I got into Roy was back in the mist of time when Britain's balls were firmly clasped by the claws of an iron harridan, there was a bunch of us students decided we ought to go and experience a festival.
Right.
And up to that time, our sort of concept of what festivals were all about were like Woodstock and Isle of Wight, so we duly went out and bought ourselves some Afghans and flares and headed off for Stonehenge and turned up looking a bit like the Fabulous Freak Brothers and everybody else. Bear in mind, this was sort of, you know, proto-Krusty and Mad Max meets mullet time, so we were slightly out of place, but nobody really batted an eyelid and had a very pleasant couple of days bimbling about in this extraordinarily bizarre bazaar that was Stonehenge Festival. And sadly didn't see Roy because I didn't know about him then, but I wish I had. And about a year or so later, through, I think it was one of the Hawkwind fanzines or something like that, I discovered that Jettisound had created this video of Stonehenge 84. So I thought, oh, right, a bit of Hawkwind and a bit of Enid to boot. Lovely, I'll get that. So that arrived and I stuck it in the video player and I thought, right, I'll fast forward. I don't know this other bloke, Roy Harper, has never heard of him. I'll listen to the Hawkwind. So I stuck it on and it started off with Hurry on Sundown by Hawkwind. So I thought, oh, right, okay, I'll give this a look. And there was some footage of the festival sort of waking up in the misty early mornings. And then this bloke came on and my fingers still sort of hovering over the fast forward button to get to Hawkwind. But I was just instantly knocked out. It was like I'd found what I'd been looking for. And he started with One Man Rock and Roll Band, which was just so emotionally intense and such a superb performance. But also, I think up until that time, my ideas of solo singer-songwriters hadn't extended to the concept of quite literally being a one-man rock and roll band. I mean, it was just superb. And then he went into Commune, which was another thing, again, this wonderful, gentle sort of tinkling song, beautifully constructed, then into White Man, which, of course, was just the ultimate protest song, and then finishing off with this with Highway Blues, which was just so... He was so up. I mean, he was smiling and leaping, you know, rocking backwards and forwards on the chair, really enjoying himself. And then suddenly there was Nick Turner being carried on stage by a brace of hawk maidens, and I stopped the tape at that stage, finger still paused over the fast forward button, rewound it and watched it again.
Wow.
So, that was really how it started. So a couple of days later, I got into town and went to have a look under the Roy Harper section, and there was Whatever Happened to Jugular.
Which wasn't a bad place to start.
It was a great
recorded
point.
Output, really.
Absolutely. I mean, I got it home and had a quick read of the back, and I thought, blimey, it's got Jimmy Page on it as well. It just keeps getting better, doesn't it? And that really did start things off. There's that sort of mixture of realising this guy's been around for some time and thinking, oh no, I've just spent 4 years training up in London and I could have seen him while he was playing around London. I missed out on all that. But then again, you've got this back catalogue to explore, I guess. So yeah, that's how I got into Roy. And then, as Sue said, we met and realised that Sue was picking up again where she left off.
Mm-hmm.
And we just started to amass this collection, didn't we?
Did you both find it accessible from the beginning, or did you find it difficult? Sue, in particular, I mean, I still try to convert people or, you know, yes, get people enthused. And I find it very difficult because I listen to it and say, oh my God, that voice is terrible. Did you instantly think it was all right? Or
I instantly loved it.
Right,
I mean,
okay.
When I first heard it, I think it wasn't the voice particularly that I enjoyed. I mean, I don't dislike Roy's voice at all, obviously, but I think it was the emotion of the whole thing. The lyrics were just resonated. The music was great. Everything about it just seemed right, as Dave said. And you know, obviously, not every single track was sort of completely overboard about everything, but really, really enjoyed it. And we used to make a lot of kind of car journeys, and we had what was it, Work of Heart on a lot.
Oh,
in the
absolutely
car.
Yeah, well, this
and it
this
was kind of the beginning of our romance,
that's right,
if you like.
Yeah.
So it was kind of a Valentine sort of album, except it wasn't Valentine, it was Work of Heart.
Yes.
Which we just you know, played it to death.
Well, it was the soundtrack to that, to our sort of, you know, beginning of our love affair, wasn't it,
oh,
dear?
Sweet.
We were two pebbles in the wheel treads of passing afternoon.
He's got such a way with words.
Yeah.
Talking of ways with words, there's two ways that people seem to appreciate music. Some people focus more on the music and the musical structure and the melodies, and some people focus more on the lyric content and the meaning behind the songs. And with Roy, I think he's said publicly a number of times that he considers himself primarily a poet and secondarily a musician, and he uses music as the way of delivering the poems. I mean, what do you think about that? Do you focus on the lyrics first, or do you find it a sort of all-in-one amorphous mass of stuff?
Well, that's an interesting question. I mean, I think initially, amorphous mass. I think initially it was just the whole package, if you like. I think that's what I got into first. Particularly in Jugular.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. But more and more as time goes past, I think I focus more and more on the lyrics, and I keep going back to it and getting more and more out of it. It's it's like you're talking about, you know, favourite books.
Yes.
I mean, how many books have you read three times?
A fair few, but not many.
Yeah. Okay. And each time you go back to it, maybe there's like a 5-10 year break or whatever, and you get a little bit something different out of it.
That's
and I think
true.
It's the same with Roy's work lyrically. So I think I got to appreciate that more and more and more. And it taught me to enjoy other people's lyrics more as well, I think, and to, you know, to really get into that. And that whole, you know, Shelley influence of Roy's as well. I mean, he is the most fantastic poet. Some of those lines are absolutely gorgeous. I mean, I dabble myself, and, you know, it just really makes you appreciate what a genius the guy is lyrically.
Well, one thing a lot of people said about him is he's the most sort of quintessentially English of singer-songwriters, and there is something about the way that he constructs his lyrics that make it sound so English or so British, and it's hard to put your finger on it, but it just is.
Yeah.
It's very clear.
I mean, I used to love, when I was growing up, I used to love the Beatles, and I used to love the lyrics of certain records. Like, I was thinking about this the other day, and it was Eleanor Rigby, where he says, wearing a face that she keeps in a jar by the door. And I love that lyric in that song, even from a childhood. And Roy's lyrics kind of resonate like that to me as well. And he comes up with the most quirky imagery and different forms of expression, and lots of kind of little idioms.
Absolutely. English idioms and
colloquialisms. Puffing Billy's shunting heroes down the lane.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely.
I love that. In One of Those Days in England. It's just those little English.
Oh, for sure. But then I mean, you talk about, I mean, that's lyrically, but then musically, I mean, there's people more qualified than me to talk about things like Dad Gad and Harry on pulling off string bends, you know, all this sort of stuff. But that sort of, again, I mean, it's probably because it's the first time I got, but that kind of Jugular period and the use of that Ovation, the Adamus Elite, you know, the bullet hole guitar, that's such a Roy sound. Do you know what I mean by that? With the sort of chorus and reverb and the echo. And it carries on with the, you know, the electroacoustic as well. But I don't know how many guitarists you can name that the minute they come on the radio or whatever, you instantly can recognise it. I mean, there's like, I don't know, say Clapton and Page and Santana, whatever. And I think that Roy is quite recognisable. And his work, I think his music is maybe slightly underrated. If you go back to things like Blackpool or Shea, I mean, incredible pieces of music.
One
really.
For All and ones like that.
Yeah. Absolutely. Mm. Absolutely. And you might have been at the same gig as us. Somebody in the audience said, "What strings do you use? Do you remember that?" And he said, "Oh, I favour a light top and a heavy bottom." Sound advice, or so.
Lesson in there for us all.
Yeah.
What out of the canon, if you like, really hits the spot for you both, and what doesn't?
Oh, crikey. That question.
That's a tricky question.
It is difficult.
I'll get it out of the way quickly.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. Well, all right. One man rock and roll band I love. The In Between Every Line version is probably my favourite. And it's the first thing I heard. So it struck home instantly. But I do identify with that a lot. And the Epics, obviously. But then it goes into albums.
You mean the progressive songs?
Yes. That's right, yes. One of Those Days and Lord's Prayer and McGowan's and, all of that. I mean, they're wonderful. But then it starts to I get confused and I think, oh, yeah, but then I really love Stormcock and I love Jugular and I love Bull in a Ming Vase and Once as well. And then there's songs that mean a lot to us, like Sleeping at the Wheel. I mean, I'd just started the practice and I spent quite a few sort of slightly restless nights and just watching Sue sleep and, you know, just couldn't sleep that well myself. And that song became, you know, quite something for me at that time.
Yeah.
One of the things I've found since I've started doing the podcast is that I've been revisiting a lot of the albums that I haven't listened to literally for years because I don't know if you're the same, but I became so familiar with the work that I kind of didn't play it anymore.
I know what you mean.
And I've started delving through it now to pick tracks to play and to find representative stuff. And it's almost like a second...
Yes.
Absolutely.
Second
Absolutely.
Coming,
Absolutely. Yeah, I must say, actually, over the last couple of months, I've had a re-listen. And I've done it chronologically as well. And that's fascinating because not only... I was saying to you when I was on the way up that you keep coming across these little nuggets that you've forgotten. You think, oh, yeah, great, I've forgotten about that one.
With great just, relish.
Yes. Yes. Exactly. Mm. So,
all right.
Yeah.
So let's try and get back to our vague bullet-pointed agenda here. the next thing I want to talk about is the early years, really, because I first... got in touch with you both when Sue, you used to email me from time to time when I initially set up the Stormcock emailing list, and I think there was a gig. Was it at the Half Moon in Putney?
It was.
And we decided we'd meet up, and this is you know one of those things that wasn't so common in those days. These days, you know, there's a million and one interest groups on Facebook and whatever else, and people meet up all the time, and it's a very well known thing. Yeah. But you know, this was kind of the one of, if not the first of these that I'd done, and you rang me up because I worked at the university at the time, and I can still remember the phone call because you sort of, you know, introduced
so
yourself, etc.
In a good way.
Yeah, good. Right, right.
I was really nervous.
Yeah.
I have to say, a bit like I am now.
Because I can remember
really
you described yourself and you said, I've got a bob haircut. I remember that very well. And anyway, somehow or another, we managed to identify each other at the gig and it just all went on from there. You
your
know?
Description
your
of
description.
Yourself was quite amusing.
It was, I mean, it made sense at the time. Well, he said, well, it's a long hair, a beard and a Roy Harper t-shirt. We walk into the Half Moon and the whole pub.
All the men in the pub. Long hair.
Oh, right, okay, so he's one of them then. Which one is it?
Should have gone for the red carnation.
We found you pretty quickly. But, that was it was a very early days, wasn't it?
We're trying to figure out when that would have been, was it like 89?
A colleague of mine actually put me onto you in the first place. Jim Ski.
Jim Ski,
A wee Jim. And if you're out there anywhere, Jim.
Yeah.
Last heard of in Rio.
That's right.
I believe.
Oh, very nice.
We've lost touch, but.
Yeah, right. No, if you do happen to. get in touch.
Love to hear from you.
Well, in those days, I don't know whether you've listened to the Darren Crisp interview yet. In fact, I haven't put out the second part yet. But I talked to him about hors d'oeuvre and how that was a really good thing for an avid Harper fan in those days before the internet got big.
Right.
And then the email list followed on from there. But during those first few years, especially when I was a bit more happy-go-lucky and had lots of spare time and could skive off of university really easily, I went to an awful lot of gigs and started going to festivals and stuff. And, you know, we coincided quite a lot over those years.
Yeah.
And it was a lot of fun, I think.
It was fabulous.
Do you have any particular memories from that time? It's an open-ended question if ever I heard one.
Specifically for the Half Moon, or
just gigs and festivals, anything in particular you...
Well, we were saying on the way up how fantastic those Half Moon gigs
were.
Not that we went to every single one, but the ones that we went to.
Yeah, there was something about that place, wasn't
there? The black hole of Putney.
Yeah.
Because it used to become in the summer.
Well,
it
was that really sticky, you know, beer soaked carpet where you used to sit cross legged.
If you sat down for too long, you'd never get up again.
Absolutely,
In those days, we did used to sit cross legged on the floor for hours, it seemed like.
Yeah, staring up because Roy, they had the stage, and then Roy used to be on this drum raise or something.
He used to be raised up,
a bit higher up. Yeah.
But close to you.
Oh, close, yeah. The thing was, there was an intimacy, wasn't there?
That's right.
You felt like the audience could have a conversation with him.
It was a real,
there was no barrier.
In your front room.
Yeah.
Yeah. They were great, those gigs. They were really, really good.
Yeah, so. I enjoyed those a lot. But yeah. No, we went scampering about.
What happened was,
in June 87, Roy came to play in Brighton. And that was the first time we saw him live.
Yeah.
And we went along. And up until now, you know, we'd had the recorded output, haven't we?
And not all of it.
But right. we had a good grasp of where he was coming from and why we liked him so much. But the live thing just took it to such another level.
Oh yeah.
I mean, the sound was fantastic anyway. Mm. That was absolutely superb.
Mm.
And you got the in-between song chat.
This kind of cosmic
buffoonery that went on stage, you know. And it was like, oh, great, this is really good. And then we just had to chase around and try and see him as much as possible.
That's right. Suddenly you realise every gig is an event and every event is different.
Yeah.
You know, and you just want more and more, don't you?
Definitely obsessed for a year or two.
All over the shop, didn't we? Up to Milton Keynes and Canterbury, Spilsbury and Nottingham, and
down to Gloucester.
Gloucester, yeah.
Saw him in Norfolk. Once.
We did, yeah.
St
Andrew's Hall in Norwich. Yeah, that's right. We all kind of planned our holiday in Norfolk Broads around a Roy Harper gig. It's true, actually. Yeah.
But when you look back, it just seems crazy to.
It does really. We did cover some miles, didn't we?
And had some
strange journeys as well. It was always a bit of a palaver, wasn't it, getting to a Roy Harper gig? There was always some curveball.
Whoever travelled casually in my car.
Yeah, exactly.
We did used to get in some situations occasionally. Mm. Wow. Yeah, always weird.
And also, I went to my first ever festival with you too. I think, which
really?
Was that Cambridge Folk Festival we went to was the first one I'd been to.
Oh, okay. There's a photo of that.
Which is interesting. We'll dig that out later on.
And then, you know, more followed after that, including the old Glastonbury and whatnot, which I wouldn't do now. But I know you did last year, didn't you?
We did, unfortunately.
We did last year. Yeah, I'm still shaking the mud out of my ears.
It was horrendous.
Fortified by Perry, kept us going, didn't
it? The only thing that kept us going was the brothers' pear cider.
But Roy at Glastonbury in 1990, that was a memorable one.
1990 was fantastic.
That was extraordinary, wasn't it?
Because do you want to...
Yeah, well, we bumped into Darren, didn't we, on the Friday, and we spent sort of a couple of hours in the workers' beer tent, chewing the fat with him, chewing the cud, swiggers with attitude. And he told us that Roy was going to be doing a sound check at midday, didn't he, in the old acoustic tent.
In the acoustic tent.
And this was
stage.
The old white canvas acoustic tent, sort of 700 capacity, something like that. So we turned up there about half 11 or so. And Jackie was sort of fettling the stage and putting scaffold poles underneath the monitors and stuff to get in the right place for Roy. And then she had to sort of mountaineer up this other bit of scaffolding to this rickety mixing desk. And Roy came on stage to do his sound check, and he was wearing this lovely batik shirt and this sort of mirrors and baseball cap thing. Mm. And anyway... It wasn't working out, was it? They were having a lot of trouble with several of the channels. There was people backstage were due to come on. They were getting a bit sort of, you know, twitchy.
Yeah, the first act.
Yeah, and there were a few people in the audience that thought this was the first act and started heckling him as well.
Yeah.
So eventually, you know, sort of, right, that's it, I'm going home, you know, if this isn't sorted now. And incredibly, it was an engineer suddenly popped out of the woodwork and got it sorted.
Right.
But then we spent the rest of the afternoon gradually working our way, playing musical chairs, working our way up these benches at the back of the acoustic tent so we could get to the top, which A, had a good view, and B, had a backrest.
Right.
And saw some quite good stuff, actually, didn't we? It's like Catherine Tickell and Andy White
and
Blows a Bella and Steve Tilston. And
met some kind of stuff in there.
It was, wasn't it?
Met some really nice people.
Met some very nice people, actually.
So you spent the whole afternoon.
We spent the entire afternoon.
We did, yeah. I mean, it was a bit mad. But,
he wasn't due on till sort of 10 o'clock at night.
Oh, gosh.
But we wanted to get a good spot.
Yeah. We sort of sent out for food and beer occasionally.
I was going to say, did you take a
bucket? Oh, yeah, no, we used to go.
We
came and went a bit.
Yeah.
Right, okay.
Oh, yeah.
But more or less the whole day in there, yeah.
Well, that's right. Well, he was due on at 10:30.
Yeah.
And by 11, Jackie was sort of swinging off the front of this mixing desk, sticking plugs in. And the tent really was starting to fill. I mean, I think people knew Roy was on, and the stewards were trying to, you know, stop them from coming in. And the guy from Matt from the Bailey Works, who was comparing it, was sort of like, dude, stop, don't, nobody else come in. You know, this is getting difficult, this is dangerous for his capacity and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
And anyway, Roy eventually sort of came on. He started off with Once. And he was about 3 minutes into it, and there was this great crack to our left. And the seat sort of judded, and people started flinging themselves off the back like a bunch of lemmings. Like this seat was about to collapse because people, you know, it was
so
full.
People
were hanging off the back of it.
Oh,
and we had to make a decision, didn't we?
Do we we die happy watching Roy, or do we run off, run for our lives? Well, yeah. We decided to sit tight.
Oh, gosh, and we did sit tight, and the thing held.
The thing didn't collapse.
No,
in the end.
Okay.
There were just too many people hanging off the back.
But yeah. it was an extraordinary gig, really, because the evening was meant to finish at 2:00. And the environmental health officer had decreed that, no, that's it, the whole site's going to close at 12:30. So Roy's already a bit late on. And then he's been given this, you know, this curfew.
Deadline.
And you don't, you know, that's the last thing you want to do,
Red
Roy.
Red rag to a bull,
Oh, he was not a happy Hector, I'll tell you, after. Not at all. And the thing was, he couldn't then indulge in the inter-song chat. So it was like bang, song after song after song. So it was uber intensity, really.
Yeah,
was
very
the thing.
Intense.
I mean, some great, you know, some great stuff. I mean, but Me and My Woman was fantastic. But it was over in a flash. I mean, he did this extraordinarily emotive version of Hangman.
Oh yeah.
And then he was gone. Whether he just didn't have time to say thanks or whatever, or just stormed off, I don't know. But they pulled these great black curtains across, which billowed like some sort of hellish spinnaker, and that was it. You know, that was your lot.
A night to remember.
Yeah.
So he'd only been on about less than an hour.
It felt like that. I mean,
we waited all day.
We had. Yeah, I mean, we did bump into him the following, about 2:00 on Monday morning, trotting across Yeoman's Bridge with, you know, a big smile on his face. He was all right again. But,
yes.
Oh, so, yes, that
well,
one
festivals,
was...
That's festivals, though, isn't it?
It is
well,
festivals.
Well, that's exactly right. It's complete chaos. You never know what's going to happen.
No,
that's true. Absolutely. Mm. I think you have to take it as it comes, but it was that extra constraint on Roy that, it was daft, really.
Well, yeah.
OK, well, moving on a few years then, at one point, you as a humble dentist from Brighton.
Not so humble, but thank you.
I was hoping Sue would say that. Decided to get into music promotion.
Yeah.
How on earth did that happen?
Yes, bit of a departure, isn't it?
Just a bit.
Yeah. Well, what happened was...
Get your teeth into it.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
It was either at... there was a gig in Manchester. Was it the Withenshaw Theatre?
Yeah,
something like that. It's Foxy Fowler's testimonial, anyway.
Yeah.
And it was either that one, or it was at Crop Ready talking to Darren Crisp and Tony Pugh.
Mm.
And this was about 91. And it was 4 years since Roy had last played in Brighton. Now, bear in mind, we've been, you know, belting around the country to see him. I was like, can you save us a train fare just once? You know, when are you going to come and play Brighton?
Yeah, and Brighton's not exactly the sort of... It's a good place for music.
Yeah,
it's a good
absolutely.
Place for
it's
the
got
arts,
a good scene. Yeah, so, absolutely, for sure. Yeah.
Certainly did that.
So there was this sort of tongue-in-cheek reply from them, sort of like... Yeah, well, you know, when you put him on, like, you know. So we looked at each other and we thought about it, knowing nothing about promotion until we went, all right.
Yeah.
So they gave me Jim McPhee's phone number, Acorn Entertainment, up in Birmingham. And I gave him a call and we set a date.
Right.
And I really wanted to do the Gardner Arts Centre. Because that's where we'd seen him, and it was lovely in there. The acoustics are fantastic, but it had gone. The date had gone. It was booked. So then we were a bit stumped.
Mm.
And you suggested that I talk to the entertainments officer, didn't you,
at the
university? Because we'd seen a few gigs at the Mandela Hall.
Right. Yeah.
So I thought, oh yeah, that's a good idea.
Student Union used to run it. Yeah.
Yeah. So I thought, oh right, okay, yeah, I might be able to get him to do it. So I had a chat with him. And he said, yeah, you know, 6th of March, 92. Yeah, that's free. You can have that date. I said, oh, great. Yeah, yeah. So if you put him on. No. You can put him on. You can promote it. I think, oh, really? Yeah, you can do it all right. And bless him, we met him in the bar, didn't we, in the student's bar. And he spent, it must have been a good hour. We furnished him with a couple of pints, took a load of paper with us and feverishly made notes about all the ins and outs of old promotion and ticket printing
about
and
baptism
PA
by
hiring.
Fire.
Yeah, well, absolutely, yeah. I mean, and he was great, though. I mean, he gave me all these contact numbers of, you know, people to put up posters and newspaper contacts and radio contacts and all this stuff.
You wouldn't have done it if it was anyone else but Roy. I mean, it was only because it was...
Well,
you know, he was our sort of
labour of love and all that.
Exactly.
Isn't it?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. But, and you know, we wanted to do it.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, I think it was inevitable, but that we were going to get involved in some form or the other, because I think there's a slim line between uber fan and certifiable obsessive.
Don't know what you're talking about.
But yeah, well, I was wobbling a bit twixt the two at that time as well. But the thing about the promotion was it legitimised it. You know, I could actually go out and say, hey, there's this great guy in town. You've got to come and see him. I mean, just imagine how great it is to look around town. Everywhere you look, there's a picture of Roy because I plastered the place in Poe. You couldn't move for Harper.
Yeah.
So, no, it was great.
All right, so you did that for, what, 2 years, 3 years?
Eight.
Eight? Good Lord, that's... That's my memory.
Yeah, 92 to 2000. So I promoted 10 gigs for Nick and 8 for Roy, I think, all told.
Good Lord, I didn't realise it was that many.
Yeah.
So what was the high point and what was the low point?
Ah, right. Well...
lots of high points, actually.
Lots of high points, yeah. Certainly. I mean, the day of the gig was always great, but there's a lot of work.
Yes.
The thing is that because I was only doing
part-time
for, yeah, isolated gigs really for Roy, I mean, to put it in some perspective, there was a period in 92 and 93 when I as a little offshoot, I'd formed a thing called the Natural Transport Company.
Oh, I remember that.
With your friends and our friend Simon Taylor, of course. Good old
indeed.
Simon. And it wasn't just Roy and Nick gigs initially. We put loads of gigs on.
Yeah.
But as time went along, I just concentrated on Roy and Nick.
Mm-hmm.
And there were things like the first gig at the Mandela Hall, Jim McPhee sent me these lovely posters for Roy. And I rang him and said, well, it hasn't got the details on it. It doesn't tell you where it is.
Just blanks.
No, you put that on. Oh, right. Well, how do I do that? And he said, well, you get some A4 gum back paper, you photocopy and you stick it on. I thought, oh, right. Okay. So I did that. I stuck them on and they all went up on the outside sites, on the council poster sites, like the Double Crown sites.
Yes.
2 days later, torrential rain. Half of them, the details are washed off. So 11 o'clock at night, I'm running around Brighton with some fresh photocopies and a can of PVA, sticking these things back on the posters again. So that was a bit of a low point. But
yeah.
And standing in the rain, you know, handing out flyers at gigs you hadn't even been to. So waiting for gigs to finish.
Oh, yeah.
Or even gigs you were at, you know, getting twitchy and jumping out your seat before the last number so you could get out the front to give people flyers.
Puts a different light on it, doesn't it?
Well, that's right. So, yeah, there was that kind of thing. Mm. But you learn a lot very, very quickly. I mean, that first Mandela gig... I hired this lighting rig, which was the sort of thing you might have at a wedding. It was so diddy. And this was a 600-capacity venue. I mean, Tony Pugh took one look at this thing. He just fell off his seat laughing, you know. he helped me set it up, admittedly. But and when Roy was doing the soundtrack, it was really boomy because this was on the first floor. You were at the gig.
Yeah, I think I was, yes.
Yeah,
yes,
and it's like a suspended ceiling, a wooden ceiling. So very, very, very boomy. And also no seating. Mm. So this wasn't a good start. And I hadn't really, you know, thought about that at all. But when Roy came on stage, you know, he sort of said, oh, well, it's better than Leeds Town Hall, I suppose. He was a bit grumpy. And I thought, oh, you know, it's the beginning of my very first...
I
was
boots.
Quaking.
Oh,
yeah,
I
mean,
can imagine.
You know, oh, dear, butterflies fluttered and scenery shook, literally. And anyway, very, very quickly, the audience, I mean, the Brighton audience is always good fun anyway.
Yes, I remember.
But that this lovely, humorous banter started to go backwards and forwards. You could see Roy getting into it. And after about half an hour or so, he was just leaning back in his chair doing an a cappella version of Acapulco Gold and Nick playing that bizarre sort of, you know, discordant version of Stairway to Heaven or was
Stairwell to Clapham.
That's it, yeah, Stairwell to Clapham.
So, yes, so and, it worked out all right
so
on
it,
the night,
it did.
As they say.
Well, yeah, they finished the first half and the lights came up and we just looked at each other and thought, wow, you know, look, there's 600 people.
Yeah,
this
what
has
a nice
worked.
Feeling.
But
that
then
was a real high.
That was a high. Then another low almost immediately because then Roy came back on stage and below us was this bar where we met the student union bar where we met the entertainment officer and there was this
disco.
Roy sat down and was this boom, boom, boom,
oh, no.
boom. And this disco started. I thought, no!
Oh, no.
So I look at Roy and you can see him like raise an eyebrow quizzically and he sort of listens through me and he says, good, isn't it? And he starts dancing about on his chair, you know. So just thought, oh well, what the hell? Let's get into it. And so yeah, it really worked out well. And by the end of it, he did say he'd had a really good night. But he said, you know, next time I'm gonna get you all sat down, you know. So within 3 days, I was back on the phone to Jim McPhee, and the next gig was months and months and months away. But I made damn sure that I got it.
Oh yeah.
So
at the Gardner Arts.
At the Gardner Arts.
Yes.
Sitting
center.
Down.
But,
yes.
But I think my favourite gig, the Salus Benny gig in 99 was great, but the Gardner Arts in 94 was really special. I mean, Roy and Nick were just on such good form, and they that was a tour where they were referring to themselves as the Fabulous Mistake Brothers.
Yes.
And that was superb. And I mean, I remember stuff like Roy sort of wanted to go off for a bit of a walk, and backstage at the Gardner Arts, they've got one of these little push-button key security lock things.
Yeah.
And I said, shall I write the code down? He said, no, just tell me. So I told him this 8-digit code. Off he goes. An hour later, he comes back. The guy's memory was, you know, extraordinary, absolutely incredible. But and that gig, you know, that again, there's this thing about, you know, White Man, the introduction to White Man, the recorded version,
where
he talks about the difference between the rich country and the poor country.
Yes.
So with the poor country, you all get together and you groove together in the mud and the dust and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
And you have a thing. Well, I think that's the same is true with a really good gig, is that the audience gets into it. There's a lot of feedback.
It takes on the life of its own. It's got this sort of dynamic quality. Somehow you can almost sort of feel it in the air. It's amazing.
Yeah, there's a lot of banter. At one point he said, I'm really having a conversation with some of you tonight. You know, this is great. And little silly things happen like this in the middle of this guy got up and walked to the front of the stage, took a picture of Roy in the middle of the song, which didn't bother him at all, then turned round to the audience, shouted out "Say cheese," took a picture of us, went and sat down again, at the end of which Roy said, "Oh, thanks for that. That's the first time that song's been remotely funny." And it was, you know, he just took the whole thing in his stride. Yeah. But then he broke a string after One Man Rock and Roll Band. Nick was coming on, and they were about to play "Hallucinating Light," and I thought, oh no, because it's lovely when Nick plays with him. So Simon was sat next to me, who you know is blooming good guitarist in his own right. So I sort of, a mixture of sign language and what have you, we got this guitar off of Nick and gave it to Simon to restring. So they played, and Simon restrung it, he tuned it, you know, he stretched the string, did the whole thing. And then at the end of it, Roy says, "Can I have that other machine back, please, lad?" And we passed it up, and he grips the G string in both hands and bounces this guitar up and down, to the great collective cringe of all the other guitars. Well, you might as well find out if it's going to break, he says, you know. Oh, flipping heck.
You don't want somebody twanging your G-string on stage. That's what I
definitely
know.
Not.
Goodness
no.
Me.
So, but yeah, that was a lovely night. Really, really good fun. And then I had to sort of move things along a bit because I'd done my usual kind of, you know, sort of pan-promotional bit, and they'd got themselves booked into to do a radio interview after the gig, which is really silly.
Yes.
But... anyway, we managed to finish on time. They disappeared off to this gig, and Sue, I think if I remember right, so you went home with Julie and a few folks,
probably.
And I think you were the one who taped it, didn't you,
probably.
Off the radio. And anyway, I found it the other day, and I sent an email to Southern Counties BBC. And I said, you know, this goes back some years, but is there any chance we could use a little snippet of this for the Roy Harper podcast? And amazingly, they wrote back and said, well, yes, you can, as long as you introduce it. So basically, it's Roy and Nick on the Tommy Boyd Show, BBC Southern Counties Radio, 11:45 p.m. on Friday, the 11th of November, 1994.
Got us stage high. Mm-hmm. Which isn't the normal condition that you would interview someone at 3 o'clock in the afternoon in.
No. Right. I think it's much better if people are high. I like the adrenaline thing.
It's a sort of a... It's not just adrenaline, though. It's whole... There's a whole sort of landscape in front of me when I get on a stage.
It's very Moorish, isn't it?
There's hills and valleys and rivers and...
Do you think it's therapeutic performing?
Sorry?
Is it therapeutic, ultimately, performing?
I think it's kept me alive for a long time. I think it wouldn't be... If it hadn't been for the exercise that I get on a stage, I'd be much worse off physically, I think. It's not that I prance around a lot, it's just that you have to take in... It's a discipline, you have to take in air and a lot of it. Sometimes it's very bad because it's, of course, a very thick, smoky club and or something.
It's quite exhausting.
But it is it is
opening yourself.
You're working. You're really working. So if you work hard for a couple of hours a day like that, at least there's part of you that's fit. You know, your feet are going up and down. Your muscles. There's a lot of muscles you use in the body. Strangely enough, sat down playing the guitar.
But isn't there also? By the way, you're tuned to Southern Counties Radio, and we're talking with Roy Harper and his boy. I knew you were coming in. I forgot
Nick.
Your name.
Nick.
Nick. Sorry, Nick. Thanks, Nick. I'm Tom, by the way.
Tom.
How do you do?
Hi,
Tom.
Hi there.
Hi.
My doctor's called Tom.
It's a sort of a doctorish name, isn't it? I wanted to be something like, I wanted to be called something, you know, like Wolfgang or
Or Gulliver.
Did you choose Nick?
What?
Did you choose Nick? Weren't you tempted to go something a little bit...
Yeah, sort of came out with pointed ears, really.
But you weren't tempted to be a little bit more
Old
abstract.
Nick.
You didn't...
Old Nick.
You didn't toy with anything.
No,
bizarre.
I actually... With one of my other children, I called him Benjamin Franklin Ethelwolf.
That's good. Ethelwolf.
Yeah.
Did you? There, you see.
Ethelwolf was Alfred's father.
Mm-hmm.
Poor bastard.
Alfred was the fourth son of... Or was he the fifth son? Fourth, I think. And he was a bit down the line, didn't expect ever to be king, and he was sent to Rome as the youngest son and educated.
We did not
what
know that.
What a mistake to educate a king. Damn.
No.
Wow.
They'd never learn.
No, no.
Alfred didn't do too badly. Mind you, he taught himself.
Yeah, he was actually the founder of our language, of course.
Is that right? No, I did not know that.
Well, no, if Guthrum and the rest of the Danish hordes would have overrun us at that point, we'd now be as... Had you ruled to my
village? Ooh, it sounds very... back to therapy. That sounds primal scream therapy, that one.
It's actually quite common in Scandinavia.
Having a good old shout is good for you as well,
isn't
it?
The old social contract they've got there, you know, with each other.
Because I was reading some stuff about you. We get sent, don't we, documents explaining all the backgrounds of people that we're looking forward to interview if you work on the radio.
Right.
And you've had an interesting life.
A checkered
life,
career.
Is that how you call it, a checkered career?
That's what they said when I left school.
Mm.
Things haven't changed very much.
But you've had all sorts of ups and downs, haven't you?
Yes. Do you know what they said on my last report? They said at school, my last school report, has been seen in the vicinity of the school recently.
I can't beat that, but I did have a biology teacher say Gary should pay more attention in class. My name's Tom.
Oh, right. Yeah. That's it. Actually, my first year was pretty good as well. A math teacher said, when he doesn't fiddle in inkwells or daydream, which is rare, he has shown some ability.
Good report, though. Would you have wanted a better one than that, really?
No, it's pretty
good,
isn't it?
Did you want works hard and fastidiously? Would you ever wanted that?
Yeah, there were points in time at which it would have been desirable, but then, you know, you began... Then I saw the blinding light. I was on the road to Damascus at the time.
Nick, you've got a dad who, a lot of us, in fact, probably all of us, at some stage, particularly when we were teenagers and things, mm-hmm. really wanted a dad who was different.
Yeah. Did I.
Oh. No. That's good. I think we don't have to explain that you do comedy on your act as well as sing.
Well, it's a one long. Yeah, it is. It's a laugh. It's a good laugh.
Mm. Now, this is my dad here, and he's my dad, you know, so...
No,
we have the same ups and downs, any dad-son relationship, yes. I guess.
Yeah, well, we were prepared to talk about it.
We did, then.
Which family doesn't cut each other's throats?
Absolutely.
You boss! You fuck!
Get him! Get him!
You fucker!
Okay.
All right, I think we get the gist of that. Thank you for perhaps one of the most explicit...
Graphic details.
Demonstrations of domestic rivalry.
Oh, do you want your shoe back?
So, where was I? I was completely thrown by it. that we had there. Can you blame me?
Well, you can become the third mistake brother if you want.
I suppose it was good, yeah. It was a bit of kudos at school. With your mates, you know, your dad's off, but I didn't see enough of him, really, for my personal emotional
needs.
Neither
did I. I was in a sort of, I was in some kind of delirium between 20 and 40.
Do you know what it says about you on one bit of paper I read? It said you had a self-induced nervous breakdown. Do you ever get to read these things?
That's pretty good, isn't it? Self-induced nervous breakdown. Actually, I can have one of those every day, really.
I was going to say, that's your weekly.
That's my fortnightly. No, it's my forte. Travelodge.
Good for you.
Sorry.
Are you enjoying yourself? Are you enjoying this chat?
Are you recording this?
The psychiatrist is in. It's going out live, you knew that.
Yes, I did, actually.
Good, that's
yeah.
All right. Just checking. And what else? Well, I'll tell you what, whilst I find the other thing that I wanted to bring up with you, have we missed you now? Yes, we have, haven't we? You're in Brighton tonight, and
yes.
Then you're off...
Colchester tomorrow.
Yes. Why are you coming here, then? You've got nothing to plug.
I've got no idea. It was
no
really
reason
silly.
To be here.
There were lots
of... You could be on your way to Colchester now and...
No, we could be back in the dressing room drinking my Holston
pills. Drinking your Holston
pills. Right.
Well, let's plug the Gary Show.
That's a good idea.
Tom.
Exactly.
Let's plug the Tom Show. Gary.
He sleeps
He's getting his lines wrong again.
He sleeps in the knife box, your boy does. What are your songs like? As ever?
Yeah, more or less.
Mm-hmm. I think they're better.
Do you? Oh. I was thinking they were just that tiny bit better. Yeah.
Yeah?
I think just maybe. They could be worse, though.
They're a little bit faster.
Things are... They are, aren't they?
Yeah.
I keep asking them to be...
Definitely.
Yeah, that's right. So, maybe they'll get really quick.
Yeah.
And
before.
We'll be able to do more of them and the settle end.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll be able to go home before we've started.
Marvellous. What a marvellous idea. And we could do the radio show the week before.
Very good. Sorry, have you lifted that from in between two songs? Or did you make that up as you went along?
No, this is complete...
He's making it up as he goes along.
Fabrication.
Can't do that. You'll be in broadcasting at that rate.
Do you realise there's some people listening to this out there?
No.
What did you say?
You fools! You can't be serious!
The songs are... we did some old stuff tonight. There were a lot of old songs. Usually there's one or two new ones, but I've got a big project ahead at the moment. I've started off as the Seven Ages of Man, but... You know, I got to 243 and I gave up. And it's now called Songs of Love. And it's probably going to be about an hour long, split into 15-minute pieces, and to allow the audience to participate with their hands now and again. You know, or other parts of their body, whichever they wish to, you know, perform with.
Steady on.
I think it'll be about an hour long, and I think that I'm going to pull all kinds of people in to help me make. I think it's going to be one of my better efforts, because I feel like it.
A collaboration.
A huge collaboration with the rest of the Martians here.
I'm just looking ahead, looking down your biography again, which fills 6-7 pages, and it doesn't. And there's nothing wasted either. It says here that you used to spend most of your time being. This is 1964.
Can I read the news tonight?
Would you like to? Would you like to read the news? I don't know if it's actually physically possible, because the news comes from our news studio.
Bruce Brobbelaar.
Maybe I could interrupt.
Or would you like to make the news up?
Yes.
Okay.
Today in Parliament, nobody turned up.
You're going to ad-lib it?
Bruce Brobbelaar asked Douglas Hurd some questions in the House.
Well, I'll cue you. Wait. Okay, here we go. This is a... Put your headphones on. The spoof news bulletin.
Yeah.
Courtesy of Roy Harper and Nick Harper. It's about 2 minutes ahead of the actual news bulletin, and I'll introduce it properly, all right?
Right.
Are you ready?
Yes, okay.
Do you want the bed as well, as they say?
The bed.
This is a fake news bulletin. The real news bulletin is coming up. I have to say things like that because there is a listener in Southend who's stupid enough to think that your news is the real news. Here we go. Make it nice and authoritative.
Yes, I'll be... yes.
Here we go. I'll cue you. The build-up's usually longer than the news, by the way.
In Guildford, Hove, Wadhurst, Horsham, Camberley, Petworth and Rye, this is BBC Southern Counties Radio.
Your newscasters, Roy and Nick Harper.
Good evening. Come unto you from downtown Billingshurst.
Live at the speed of sound, folks.
Bruce Grubbelaar let in more than 3 own goals.
And reports are coming in of him spending all his bribe money on questions to be fielded on The Gary Show. You're listening to The Gary Show. This is the news.
And Tom will be speaking to you in a minute. But anyway, I think he let in a hamburger stand as well. What do you think about that? I think it's a silly piece of news, isn't it?
And now the weather. There will be no weather tonight.
No, the planets have stopped turning round.
I preferred that, didn't you? I'm just speaking to the producer.
Oh, God, hold on.
Producer's never...
What's that?
He's always...
Produce!
He's always doing his toenails.
I've just given up, quite frankly.
Always doing his toenails.
It's a hopeless cause.
I've been trying.
Did you not think
that was better than the real thing? Nothing against Danielle, who's standing by in our studio.
Well, her name's Daniela.
Daniela, I'm sorry, I knew that.
It wasn't really.
Oh, all right. Fair enough.
I think she does a much better job.
All right. Well, I'll introduce the proper news.
What are you trying to do to me? Are you trying to finish me off? Get my P45 put on the table now.
Good night, Alistair.
P45. What are you talking about?
Here comes the news. Roy and Nick, thank you for being a breath of fresh air.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you for being Gary.
Exactly. We come by next time.
Yes, great, we will. We'll bring our guitars and
Yeah, yeah, upstage.
And our sledgehammers. Real nuisance.
We'll make the news.
No, go and get that Holston Phil.
Thanks, Tom.
Thank you, boys.
Yeah.
Where's Daniela, then?
She's in our news studio. Just 60 miles away, so luckily you can't bother.
Oh, damn.
After news, it's the Midnight Society and you on the phone. 0645 570057.
Littlehampton and Haywards Heath. This is BBC Southern Counties Radio.
It's midnight. I'm Daniela Ralph.
There's absolutely no way to follow that other than to say part two of this outstanding interview will be next month. Now, a quick origami update. Now the A to Z of Harper. I've chosen H, and when it came down to it, I had to pick Hangman. Hangman is off Roy's Juggler album, and it's his amazing, pithy, heartfelt expression about capital punishment. And I'm going to read you a couple of paragraphs from Roy's fantastic lyric book all about that track. During the months I spent in Walton Jail, Liverpool, we had to pass the death cell on the way to work in the morning. It was a spooky experience. It had seen its last use, but nobody knew that at the time, and it was still being maintained. There wasn't much to see, except that 7 cells had been bricked up and converted into a self-contained unit, the final cell at the end being the death cell. The condemned dropped into the cell below and was carried by an underground passage to the prison hospital to be pronounced dead and immediately thrown into the grave, which had been traditionally dug for the purpose by the 6 men who looked after him around the clock. 2 at a time, in 8-hour shifts, it was the most disgusting museum piece I had ever had the opportunity to pass on a daily basis. Soon after my release, I read a book called Hanged in Error, which discussed 16 such cases. I decided to confront blind authority in a different manner. I gave a voice to my disenchantment, and eventually I wrote a song about judicial murder, full of actual gory detail. It came right from the middle of a raging heart. This version of Hangman is from the vinyl edition of In Between Every Line, a Live Roy album, and it's not available on the CD version at the moment, although I'm hoping that a reissue of the CD will come out as a proper double CD and then it will be reinstated.
It must be one of the worst feelings known to any of us. That live in these islands voted to bring back hanging by the neck until dead.
How the hell...
So I wrote this cast out fictitious place,
separated from your own, completely ostracized,
draconian ground.
How the hell,
or they're living with
thrown into a pit of lime,
if you're innocent. Anyway, this is... wandering around this planet. Like we fucking
are. What the hell are we?
Think about it.
Thank you.
wish to be untied. To rip those lies, clean out your throats, that my death might somehow be justified. There's no unconsecrated ground in my heart or in my mind. I lived and died in a world full of snakes, and I'm buried in a vicious life. We are creatures of darkness.
Okay, this episode has run a bit long, so I'll cover the listener feedback next time. Just some quick credits. This podcast is issued under Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivative Works 2.0 UK, England and Wales license, which means you can share it with others but can't change it, claim you made it or charge for it. The Roy Harper music in this podcast is used by kind permission of Science Fiction Limited. It is not for copying or redistribution. The intro music is by Adam Leonard. If you want to send in a voicemail, it's 01223 850282 +441223 850282. I got lots of reviews on iTunes. I'll talk more about that next time. Still working on the origami. Picture to come. Bye.